The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
Case 2 from The Gateless Barrier by James Fox. Once when Pai Cheng gave a series of talks, a certain old man was always listening together with the monks. When they left, he would leave too. One day, however, he remained behind. Pai Cheng asked him, "Who are you, standing here before me?" The old man replied, "I am not a human being. In the far distant past, in the time of Kashyapa Buddha, I was head priest of this mountain, at this mountain. One day a monk asked me, 'Does an enlightened person fall under the law of cause and effect or not?' I replied, 'Such a person does not fall under the law of cause and effect.' With this, I was reborn 500 times as a fox. Please say a turning word for me and release me from the body of a fox.'" He then asked Pai Cheng, "Does an enlightened person fall under the law of cause and effect or not?" Pai Cheng said, "Such a person does not evade the law of cause and effect." Hearing this, the old man immediately was enlightened. Making his bows, he said, "I am released from the body of a fox. The body is on the other side of this mountain. I wish to make a request of you. Please, Abbot, perform my funeral as for a priest." Pai Cheng had a head monk strike the signal board and inform the assembly that after the noon meal, there would be a funeral service for a priest. The monks talked about this in wonder. "All of us are well. There is no one in the morgue. What does the teacher mean?" After the meal, Pai Cheng led the monks to the foot of a rock on the far side of the mountain. And there, with his staff, he poked out the body of a dead fox. He then performed the ceremony of cremation. That evening he took the high seat before his assembly and told the monks the whole story. Wang Po stepped forward and said, "As you say, the old man missed the turning word and was reborn as a fox 500 times. What if he had given the right answer each time he was asked a question? What would have happened then?" Pai Cheng said, "Just step here closer and I'll tell you." Wang Po went up to Pai Cheng and slapped him in the face. Pai Cheng clapped his hands and laughed, saying, "I thought the barbarian had a red beard, but here is a red-bearded barbarian." Wu Men's comment: not falling under the law of cause and effect. Why should this prompt 500 lives as a fox? Not evading the law of cause and effect, why should this prompt a return to human life? If you have the single eye of realization, you will appreciate how old Pai Cheng lived 500 lives as a fox, as lives of grace. Wu Men's verse: not falling, not evading, two faces of the same die, not evading, not falling, 1,000 mistakes, 10,000 mistakes. So I chose this koan because it's so long and it means I have to talk less. what a remarkable story with so many turns, so much of interest. So here we are deep into coming and going, Sesshin. Practicing together on a warm summer day in the middle of January. The sunlight shining across the floorboards. So beautiful. We are lucky to be here. So, I think of this man who showed up time after time to hear the talks in the Zendo. Listening, waiting for that turning word. Waiting for the moment when he could be freed from suffering. Long, perhaps, a life of regret behind him for the mistakes he'd made. Showing up and finally brave enough to stick around. Finally brave enough to ask the vulnerable question that was in his heart. I have made mistakes in my life. The great mistake I made was imagining that I was enlightened and that enlightenment would save me from my mistakes. That enlightenment would save me from suffering. And I told a monk this when I was teaching one day. And ever since then, I have been split in two. This splitting in two is so interesting for me. What is this splitting in two of this head priest, humbled, now a fox, and a human being? I found myself just reflecting on that and thinking about how I can relate as a practitioner of the way. Noticing the different ways that I split off from myself. So often, isn't there a desire to be something other than what we are? In some sense, perhaps that's what drew all of us to practice in the first place. Maybe it was regret or sadness, loss, longing, infinite longing to be something other than what we are, that makes us sit down in the first place on the cushion and begin looking for something else. We look to Buddha and we say, I'll have what he's having, please. What's been served up for me is, a long life of car repairs. Or loss. Unfulfilled longing. I'd like something else, please. And actually, this is a wonderful thing. This longing is where we find our home. But we don't know that. We don't know that as we begin. We don't know that the way we are showing up is already the very truth we seek, is already the Buddha way. And we imagine that there is some life outside of our own that is the one we should be living. Some life where we are no longer affected by karma. Some life where we no longer grieve when someone we love leaves us in one way or another. Time steals everything. And of course, there's some part of us that knows this and no longer wants to be hurt by it. No longer wants to feel all that longing. And we imagine that maybe there is a life we could live where we are somehow above life itself. No longer in it. Like some floating guru in the sky. And of course, there is a promise, isn't there, in this tradition? A promise of enlightenment. A promise of awakening. We have the Four Noble Truths. There is suffering. There are causes. We can examine these causes and be liberated. That promise is held forth. So what we do is we construct an image of a life that is different. We don't think that the liberation is the life we already have. We can't imagine that. We can't imagine that the Four Noble Truths all remain true simultaneously. That suffering continues. And that it is our freedom. This seems a contradiction. It has to be a life that's different from the life that I have. Not the life in this old body. Not the life of wasted time. So we create a new version of ourself. The one that's happy. The one that's free in a way that we imagine might be possible if I keep practicing. And this is how we split in two. This is the life of a fox. Clever. Clever fox, always trying to find a way to avoid what's here now. You know, if I can just practice with that skillful means of counting my breath a little bit better, if I can just penetrate this koan, if I get through this koan, get this one behind me, I'm going to finally be at ease forever. Five hundred lives we live this way. And maybe at some point, we find the courage to acknowledge what we are doing. That on some level, we're holding up a fantasy life against our own, that we are running away from the way that things actually are. And maybe at some point, we have the courage to share this. To be in the vulnerable place, to be the one who sees no way out, to show up honestly and truly. Here we stop running. Here we realize that this life is it. I have been looking outside. I have created an alternate version of myself. But I am what I am. Har har. I am what I am. Just this life. We call it giving up. If we're lucky, our hearts break. We enter into things just as they are. Even the things we are most embarrassed about, maybe ashamed of, maybe even shame itself. Wherever we are, allowing it to be, allowing it to express itself just as it is, as the Dharma we have been seeking all along. We say we die to ourselves. And we die to ourselves by becoming ourselves fully. The opportunity for intimacy with our humanness. And so there is a funeral for the high priest. Many ways of looking at this. But let's not bother getting intellectual. There is passing. There are goodbyes to the versions of ourselves that we could not maintain. And here we are. Everything fresh and new. This dying is, of course, our birth, our opening to things as they are, the simplicity of it. The simplicity of ourselves sitting together here in the Zendo. This is not abstract. I'm not talking about some idea that we will attain outside of what we are right here. I am talking about what we are right here together. You, me, in this Zendo, sitting on our cushions. The sound of the wind, sensation of our breath, our hearts full, or our hearts empty. However we are, this is our awakening. Just this. There's a great permission at the end of this case. one mistake after another. It's okay. We don't have to be perfect. You may take me as an exemplar. You know that page fiasco that happened earlier today? That was all me. Mistake after mistake, it's okay. Just be intimate with whatever's here. That's the whole project. Thank you. So this is an opportunity for our Dharma dialogue. Make yourself comfortable and welcome to face up this way if you like. This is being recorded. So if you would like us to pause the recorder while you share what you have to share, please just say so.
Socially, you're in the world in different ways and it evolves, or something stays the same. And so this place that's always here now isn't what was. Really, almost ever, it seems like. And then the sun rises and sets and rises and sets, and how you thought things were just isn't how things are. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to be vague, it's just hard to find all the words. So if you have friends, which hopefully you do, I do, it's not certain that my friends will follow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they may.
Yeah. Well, and this, you know, saying that things are not what we think, you know, in one way, is so simple. Well, of course not, but it's so profound because we live so much in this world that we create with our mind, and we think, well, I think that, therefore it's true. This is the world. And both deeply upsetting when we realize it's different. It's not. And even in the moment, whatever is going on with each one of us, I guarantee it's not what you think it is, right? And this is a great shock and pain, disorienting and incredibly liberating. And, the sun comes up again, and there is a world that's beyond whatever we think, our great failure, our great success. Something much more alive, and you cannot express it. We cannot express it, but so reliable in some way. Thank you.
Even as its specific content is utterly unreliable.
Yeah.
the reliability of this unreliable thing.
Mm.
Say thank you. I was very, very moved. It was very beautiful. And I guess one thing that really was wonderful about it was the sort of piece of this that is culturally strange. You know, the idea of being reborn as a fox and being able to, sort of be a human being. And,
a little louder.
What? Sorry, to be able to be reborn as a fox and 500 times, and also be able to be present as a person and who's saying, all the sort of culturally odd things. I understand them better since watching anime, but, in general, this is not so familiar. And yet you made it exactly us, exactly yourself, exactly us. Very naturally, I'm very grateful for that. Thank you.
It's important to understand, as Mike pointed out, that even though this is a cultural difference, it's human life.
Mm-hmm.
This sense of having many, many, many lives, which I think was what Joanne was also pointing to, in this one life between birth and death.
Mm-hmm.
And the pileup of regrets is significant for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
So the translation, certainly in modern Zen, we don't talk about rebirth, we don't talk about the many realms of existence, except as they exist in this lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Day-to-day, moment-to-moment.
I appreciated the way you expounded that this koan with such clarity. And it helped me realize one of the things that happens not only with myself, I'm sure, but with everyone. It's the sincerity with which we live our mistakes. And that we are so sincere seems to be what it's got to be right. It's, my best intentions, always wanting to do what's right. Oh, how could that be wrong? How could that be mistaken?
Yeah.
And that's it's almost like the sincerity becomes something sacred, and so it moves me to great compassion for the effort and the sincerity that with which we live our lives, but yet at the same time. To be able to see that within, even with all that sincerity, it could be we're all got it all wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's okay, and we can still honor our sincerity at the same time.
Yeah.
Right?
I like
that.
And it's not so easy to do that because of this inner voice, or many inner voices. Someone reprimands us and that's nothing compared to how we reprimand ourselves internally. And to catch those voices, to see that they're just thoughts, and they're habitual thoughts that we just took in and said, yep, this is who I am, a failure as a human being, and here's evidence. Instead, to turn it around as you are and say, wait a minute, I had the best of intentions, and to assume that everyone has the best of intentions. Everyone, even people who actually do things that I would call evil, somewhere in their little brains, they thought, this would be a good thing to do. And then not everybody has the turning that we provide in this practice, or that the characters in the story got to taste. Not everybody has that opportunity, which is sad, but we do.
Yeah.
And And that's very useful for the burning world, isn't it?
As so often happens with these talks, I need reassurance. And the reassurance for me is that indeed this life right here that we are living at this very moment in this Zendo is the awakened life. This is what we're looking for. And I know that at some level, but I have to keep hearing it. So, boy. So please reassure me.
Well, and I think that's why we give these talks over and over, you know, essentially saying the same thing.
Same talk.
Yeah.
One talk.
Because it's so wildly unbelievable,
yes.
And we know it in our heart, and we can hear it, and go, oh, yeah. And this quality of the talk, the function of the talk is to remind you of what you already know. Right, it's not to know what Mike knows, but from his deep knowing and experience, putting this out there so that you can go, oh yeah, isn't it incredible?
Yeah,
just this. Yeah, yeah.
It's just amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Well said.
It's easy to agree too easily. Like just go with the flow, just let go of things, sure. Anybody who says sure, I think doesn't really get it. To say, are you kidding me? Right? Then I think the person has begun to hear a little bit. Like, really? Really? Yeah.
And this is unbelievable. It flies in the face of everything, every culture, not just our culture, teaches, you know, about improvement, and but I think especially in the West, this self, well, no, now it's everywhere. I can be a better person if only I stop fucking up. Yeah. Okay? I want to be like these imaginary people who don't exist, who never make mistakes.
I was hit in another way by this beautiful talk.
A little bit louder.
Yeah, beautiful talk. It really took me into these, felt like we were being shown into these dark caves of wonder, of stone. And there was a funeral arranged for the fox. And for me what came up was also the funeral arranged for the high priestess. Mm-hmm. And also the inviting in of, you know, these births and deaths that we have all throughout the day, of all these, I want to say like myriad cells that we have that come up and that we welcome, and then they burn and go away, and then something else comes up and they burn and go away. And also curious about the fox. The first fox I met in my life in literature was the one in The Little Prince, the clever fox.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
He's sort of both clever, but also very wise. And so the fox, who's the priestess and who's the fox? And are they just, so something about that the practice invites all of that in for us to meet.
Yeah, I mean, you're really into the koan point of it, right?
Okay.
That each of these different manifestations of ourselves is the whole deal, and is empty. Here the life of the fox is exactly a life of grace. And those moments of imagining that the fox is the one who's bad, and the priestess, or is the one, I like how you said priestess, yes, is the one who's good, you know, etc. Like, this is, again, the mind creating separations. And it's what the mind does. And so we encounter the mind of separation as yet another form of ourselves. Yeah. And wherever we are, whatever is arising, is exactly the way.
Whatever?
Yep. You need some reassurance.
I need some reassurance. I so appreciated, Mike, how you said, too, about, you know, sort of burying these. So we have all these parts of ourselves that we have treasured, that we have thought was us, and there comes a time when we can no longer sustain, and it falls away. And rather than going, oh, thank goodness, I'm not that person anymore, but to bury it or to say goodbye with great honor, that deluded self, he tried as best he could. Thank you so much, and we can lay things to rest. There is this possibility. We don't have to lug it with us the whole time, and we don't have to condemn that one that I was. I think it goes back to honoring that sincerity at every moment, and we bow our hands and offer it up with great pomp and ceremony, and great appreciation. Yeah. Seamus had his hand.
Yeah, so I listening, and not just to this talk, I had the experience of momentarily seemingly knowing something and instantly not knowing what I knew and not knowing if I knew anything. Mm-hmm. So I'm left with, what is the purpose? What is the purpose?
Of what?
Everything. What's the purpose of practicing?
Yeah.
What's the purpose of listening? What's the purpose of speaking? What's the purpose of the question?
What a wonderful question to carry with you.
Yeah.
I'd rather not have it.
Yes. Well, Seamus, thanks for that honest response. These are, sometimes we call these burning questions, practice questions. What is the purpose? So many of the koans begin with that very question. You know, why did Bodhidharma come from the West? This character. What is Buddha? I must know. Tell me, they say to the teachers. And then the teachers answer them in these very interesting ways. I gave a while back, I found a short koan where somebody asked that of Yun Men. And his answer was, oh, what is the meaning of Buddhism? He said, it was the question. And he said, yes. That's a whole koan.
Now I get it.
Yeah. 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 So,
but I hope you lose it quickly.
Yeah, really. And that's the questioning heart is part of being human. We want to know, who am I? What is this? Why is there suffering? Why do I suffer? Why is there death? Oh my God, it's just on and on and on, trying to answer these questions. And so what is the purpose of all this is in that category of questions. So important. Mm-hmm. If you can hold it with you and not be satisfied with any answer that comes from within you or externally, these questions, just like with when the old man comes in, you know, says, I have this burning question. Is an enlightened person subject to the law of cause and effect? I mean, hello, duh, what isn't subject to the law of cause and effect? But no, he thought there was an exceptionalism. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to know, and it through 500, in quotations, lifetimes as a fox, that burned him. He wanted to know. And then this teacher just says, nope, nobody's exempt from cause and effect. And that wouldn't do it for most of us. But because this guy's been holding the question so tightly for 500 lifetimes as a fox, it blew him away. So the invitation to you is, hold your question as if it was the most precious thing that had ever arisen. Don't try to answer it. Don't be satisfied. Just keep going. And then it'll go... Or not.
Yeah, I've been kind of sitting with this idea of how many different lifetimes we have as different people within our lifetimes and lifetimes beyond that, and I find myself so constantly curious with like the dissonance of who I feel I am and then how other people see me. And so even within that kind of small immediate realm of right now, how many people I am, and all the work I feel like I do sometimes to control or to kind of somehow, you know, to the work that I can do with my own relationship being one thing, but then, you know, when I sit with someone or I sat with a teacher a little bit ago and I was like, oh, I feel shy. And they were like, you not shy. And I was like, so interesting for me to see how many people I can be and other people can be within just a moment, you know, let alone the lifetime. And all the work that I put into it when I sit and I see it that way, it actually gives a lot of ease, because there's no amount of effort I could do ever to really know how everyone, you know, to actually have any input into how anyone sees me or who I'm going to be in the next moment. And there's just a little relief, I guess, I get when I found that in your talk, so thank you.
Yeah, you point to something Mike was talking about this giving up, right? That you and I would manage the world if I could, and I've tried very hard, and you do. And here's how I would like you to see me. And then we try and we try and we try, and at some point we begin to see one, oh, it's not one single thing, there's so many. And two, we actually can't control what other people think. Great disappointment. And as you say, this great liberation, this kind of, okay. Yeah. Well, and on that, let's sit for a few more breaths on our walking.